I'm Paul Wood. I live in North London, so I've driven down to
south of the river.
Yeah.
Before we start, your book is called Tree Hunting and your name is Paul Wood. The first thing I thought when I saw that was it's serendipitous.
It is. It's called Nominative Determinism, apparently. And this one might make you laugh as well. At the weekend, I was doing a festival in Warwickshire called the Also Festival, and I was on the Woods stage, which was in the woods, with Paul Wood on stage talking about trees. So,
do you think growing up in your subconscious, you thought, I need to do something that's connected to wood?
I think so. I mean, I just assumed I would somehow. It was where I grew up, there was a wood behind our garden. So I spent all my childhood playing in the wood with all the other local kids. That was where it started, I guess. I had a couple of decades out where I didn't do anything to do with trees, but then they came back to me eventually.
Well, the reason why you're here today is to talk about your beautiful book. It's called Tree Hunting, with the subtitle 1,000 Trees to Find in Britain and Ireland's Towns and Cities. Now, just explain for the listener how long it took you to get from start to finish on the tree hunting book.
Well, this has been an epic project. It's 5 years, and over that time I travelled, I think, 30,000 miles, 20,000 of which I drove, otherwise I walked for maybe 1,000 miles. I caught trains, I went on boats, I only did one plane, I'm quite pleased to say, but it was a really, really epic journey, and it was over, you know, this long period as well.
We will pop this interview on the website so people will be able to see a picture of the book and just see how beautiful it is. But you started with the concept of wanting to find the 1,000 trees, but how did it get to publishing? Who took up the idea and who believed in you to get it this far?
Well, I guess it started. Well, there are two or three sort of starting points, really. The first one was I was up in the Orkney Islands. This must have been 7 or 8 years ago. And there's a fantastic tree in the main street there that's called the Big Tree. That's what people know it as in Kirkwall. And I just thought this was a remarkable thing, because not least because the Orkney Islands haven't got that many trees. And this tree isn't that big compared to trees we have in London, for instance. But it's a real landmark, and I thought loads of other towns and cities must have trees like this, and I think that was one of the inspirations for the journey. I'd done a map which was called the Great Trees of London map, and it has 46 trees just 46 in London, and that was also a sort of something which I was really keen to expand that and do it in other places. And then I was talking to the publisher at Penguin, and they were very keen to do a book around this. And that was really how we got to the idea of 1,000 trees, because I think that I could have carried on for another 1,000. So 1,000 is a we've got to stop it somewhere. This book will get too big, and already it's a bit of a doorstopper.
It's what I would call a table book. It's perfect for display and for dipping into and out of every so often. How did you, though, decide which trees were going to use the pun, make the cut, yeah, and which ones weren't? Because that must have been really difficult.
It was, yes. And I think, as I say, I could have included 2,000 or more. But in the end, you sort of have to make these decisions as you're suggesting there. And I kind of felt there were quite a lot of criteria which sort of fed into that. Firstly, it was, where do people live? I wanted these trees to be accessible to everybody. So I've sort of looked at where's the population centres in the UK and Ireland. And I thought the cities were the sort of focus for me as well. So I really wanted people to find a new way to explore Birmingham or Bristol or Cardiff, for instance. So each of these big cities has 20 trees in. So I was thinking, let's have those cities as population centres. Those would be really good. And then there's about 90 in London. So I kind of thought London's a special case, obviously. And so that was one of the reasons.
And we will come on to Southwest London particularly in a moment. There is one tree that is missing from this book, and it is missing in real life now. It's a sycamore gap tree. Why did you decide to omit it from the book? Because it is such, or it was such, a landmark. Also, what are your feelings on, obviously, the pair that cut it down are going to be sentenced today?
As you say, yes, it's a glaring omission. It's a glaring omission because it has glaringly been cut down, I guess. I was originally planning to put it in there because even though, you know, all the photographs you see of it, it looks like it's in the wilderness. And my idea is this is urban trees, but there's quite a few which are by roadsides. And actually, it grew not far from a fairly main road. We kind of took the decision after a while that we couldn't put in X trees, and whilst this one is special and hopefully things will grow back, I just felt like that wasn't really, we could have had a whole sort of in memoriam section at the end, and that wasn't really what I wanted to do, because I felt like, you know, one of the great hopes I have for the book is it will be a way to help raise awareness and protect existing trees in the future. So we sacrificed that one.
I'd never seen it. I'm really sorry that I haven't now that it's no longer there. How magnificent was it?
Well, it was a really, really spectacular tree because of its location. So it was on Hadrian's Wall, and Hadrian's Wall is sort of on an escarpment. So there's the road to the south of it, and then there's a gentle slope up to this wall, which is not very tall, and then there's this sort of odd gap, which is the sycamore gap, and that was where the tree was. But when you're up there on the wall, you look down, and it's quite a steep slope on the other side, which would have been clearly why they put it in such a defensive position. But the tree as well was there. Obviously, that was planted years, centuries, even millennia after the wall was in use for any purpose other than it being a remnant. So it just added a romantic quality to one of our great ancient artefacts in Hadrian's Wall.
There's been an outcry over this. People are angry. People are upset. We talked briefly off mic about developers who have been fined for felling trees for developments without permission. It's something that really angers people, isn't it?
It is. And I think quite rightly so. I think, as you also mentioned when we were off mic, the perpetrators of the Sycamore Gap felling are going to be sentenced today, and I really hope that whatever their sentence is, it will act as a deterrent for anybody else that would do anything so stupid. I feel like, though there is a sort of one rule for individual stupid people like those vandals, but sometimes developers can get away with even, you know, kind of similar sort of you know, acts. So one that springs to mind was the white webs oak up in Enfield in North London, and that was a tree that was felled at the behest of a Toby Carvery, I think it was. And they said they're sorry, they didn't realise, they thought it was dead. I mean, these excuses, I think, will keep coming. And until we get some proper protection, some legal protection, which has some teeth into it, I think we're going to continue to see these sorts of crimes perpetrated, not just by individuals, but by, you know, companies and people that know they can get away with it, because there are very, very meagre fines for cutting down trees.
It seems that people power does seem to help. I feel like books like yours definitely go in some way in assisting them for things like that.
I hope so.
So we'll move on to Southwest London, because that's where we are. Like you mentioned before, London has got, I mean, we've got protected areas. We've got Richmond Park, Kew Gardens, Bushey Park. So although we're in a city, I feel there is an abundance of trees where we are. And many of them, probably because they're in places like Richmond Park and Kew Gardens, are protected. Do you have a favourite in Southwest London?
Well, I think you mentioned Kew Gardens there, and Kew Gardens is my second home. And I kind of feel like you could write a whole book just about the trees in Kew Gardens. And I felt like I'll have to just pick one. And my favourite one is the giant chestnut-leafed oak there, which is the biggest tree in Kew. It's also the biggest tree, the biggest specimen of that species in the entire world. It's truly magnificent, north of the Palm House. But there are others. I mean, I find it very difficult to say I've got a favourite tree because,
you know... It's like having 1,000 children.
Exactly, exactly. So there are another couple that spring to mind. There's one, there's the Royal Oak in Richmond Park, which is another fabulous old oak tree. Quite small, it's set, you know, 800 years old perhaps, and it's got this name, the Royal Oak, even though nobody has ever been able to tell me why it's called the Royal Oak. There seems to be no royal connection to it particularly. It is the most perfect oak, I think, in terms of the way it looks. It's got a fence around it now, so you can't get too close to it, but I think kids would love to get into the hollows.
I think I did when I was younger, because it's the one at Pembroke Lodge, isn't it, near King Henry's Mound. Yeah. So, and to think that something was around when King Henry VIII was around, is, and so many of these trees are so old. That's quite astounding, isn't it, to think that something tangible that we can see now was also there 500 years ago.
Yes, exactly. There are many other trees like that in London, not necessarily in southeast London, but yew trees. And in fact, if you sort of go out into Surrey, for instance, there's the Crowhurst yew, which is a several thousand years old and has a door in the trunk. So yew trees can live for, you know, thousands and thousands of years. And you often see those in churchyards, and there's a lot in southeast England. But there are other trees which are magnificent for their sheer size or their rarity, for instance, which I think are also noteworthy. And going back to Richmond, there's a fabulous plane tree on the riverbank there, which I think has its feet in the water, which has helped it get to the enormous size that it has. And it grows just next to the Gaucho Steakhouse. I mean, it's not as old as there's the trees in Richmond Park, for instance, but you know, maybe it's 200 years old, but it's what it's managed to achieve in 200 years is remarkable. Also in southwest London, the oldest plane tree in London, which is planted in about 1680, grows in Barnes, which it's a little bit further into London, I guess, but it's quite a difficult tree to find, but when you have found Barney, as it's called, you will see how big these plane trees are likely to get. So the one at Richmond, for instance, maybe 200 years old, the one in Barnes 350, and the size of it is enormous.
One of the other things I also like about the book, so looking through the beautiful pictures, is you've obviously got some that are protected. You talked about Kew Gardens. You know, you're going to be able to view that by going into Kew Gardens, and it's surrounded and it's protected. But then you turn a page and you've got a tree on a street outside someone's house.
Yeah.
So both noteworthy trees, both beautiful trees, but one just happens to be at Kew Gardens, so it's got the benefit of protection, whereas the other one is just sitting in the roadside.
Exactly. And I think those are the ones which, in a way, are more important to me, because you can, as you're suggesting, is rely on Kew Gardens to look after their trees, and they're not going anywhere. But when you point out a tree in a suburb or on a street or whatever that's not got any protection, it's one which I think loads of people will have noticed, and they will no doubt regard it as a landmark, or, you know, have given it names and all sorts of things. So I think that by me drawing attention to it, that will hopefully in a small way help to protect it in the future as well, and draw attention to what is, you know, part of our heritage.
And trees are so important for the environment, for our earth. Do you think more should be done in schools to teach children? I don't remember being taught specifically about trees, but I feel like this would be a brilliant guide for teachers to have, and to get children interested and to go out tree hunting, you know, to find the trees on the map in their area.
That would be an amazing thing. I, like you, I didn't have any particular teaching about trees when I was a kid. I just self-taught, I guess, because I grew up with a wood nearby. But I think that it would be great to put more of this kind of stuff on the curriculum and be able to inspire children with what's on their street or what's in their neighbourhood. There are, in fact, My sister-in-law teaches at a school in Hounslow, and I've done a bit of... She got me in to talk to the kids there, so that was great because they were thrilled, and we did go out tree hunting in the local park as well. Well,
they've got the perfect map now, but also because so many councils we see all the time, oh, water your trees in your street. If you're watering your garden, please water the trees. So the onus is sort of back on us to look after our natural environment, isn't it?
I guess it is, and I think... that we shouldn't regard that as an onus. It's an opportunity, because I think that by not relying on other people to do it and taking those tasks on ourselves, it's a way for us to sort of commune with nature. It's a way for us to meet our neighbours, perhaps, in a way that we hadn't done before. But it also sort of connects us with the, you know, these great beings which might be growing on our street that we hadn't necessarily noticed beforehand.
I'm probably going to ask you the question which you won't be able to, I can almost guarantee you won't be able to answer, but do you have a favourite tree in the book?
Well, I'm going to say I always have one which is, this is always determined by where I am, who I'm talking to, what time of year it is, those types of things. So my favourite tree is one that I'm going to go and visit on my way home, which is it's a rare Turner's Oak, and it grows at the Kingston Gate of Richmond Park. And it's a semi-evergreen oak tree that hangs over the whole road from somebody's front garden. It must have been there for well over 100 years. It's a magnificent tree, and I thought I'd go and say hi to it.
Lovely, that sounds like the perfect afternoon. So would you like to tell the listener how they can get hold of your book?
Well, Tree Hunting, 1,000 Trees to Find in Britain and Ireland's Towns and Cities, is available in all good bookshops and the usual online places. It is one bookshop that I'll tell you about is the Kew Bookshop. In fact, I'm doing a tree walk from the Kew Bookshop by Kew Station in next month. I think it's the 9th of August, actually. So there may be a few places on that if anybody's interested in going tree hunting with me. But that's a nice independent bookshop that definitely has copies.